Chad, it kind of looks like there's a fluid other than paint that has been...
Yeah, look, it looks like Chad came on it.
It's performance art. Chad put a lot into this.
Chad, look, you know me, and I'm not even the first person to always go there, but that was the first thing that I thought when I saw this.
I don't know.
White on there. I don't even remember what that's from.
If anything, he like...
It's mostly just the yellow.
It's the mustard, yeah.
The lighting in this photo makes everything look white. Like the...
It does not. I'm looking at it.
It's yellow tinted. It looks like you... Well, I'm not going to say that.
Is
it crusty?
I am looking a little closer, and I can see like a little bit of yellow tint, but like...
Yeah.
It looks better in person. Well, I didn't expect to just be attacked like this.
Well, no. No one said it looks bad. We just said it looked like it has cum on it.
Alex insisted.
Yeah, anyway, you're listening to the Comics Podcast, episode 271.
Hell yeah.
If you heard that intro, I'm sorry. If Chad cut it, well, you know.
I will not cut you being mean to me. I want the world to know.
I like your art.
I am so mean to Chad all the time.
I'm not attached to it.
I'm never encouraging of Chad ever.
I think it looks good. I like the color scheme of it.
I like all the other colors on this, actually. It's very pretty.
Yeah. I'm your host, Sean. Let me introduce you. Quiet. Hush, children.
It's you thinking you're a fucking podcast host.
Chad is here.
Put this on your goddamn resume.
I took it off my resume. Thank you very much.
Then you can't be the host. I'm sorry. You've lost
Alex is here. Is it on your resume, motherfucker?
I don't have a resume. Got you.
Well, fair enough. And Emily is here.
I'll put it on my resume, but I don't think I'll be applying to any jobs unless I get divorced, so.
Well, must be nice.
Must be nice to get divorced.
We are the Comics Podcast. We don't usually talk about Chad's cum, but this episode...
Are you sure?
I don't think we've talked about Chad's cum once on the show. But... We're here. We're back after a week off.
It's yellow. I mean, on the painting, not in real life.
Oh, Chad, no.
This episode is off to quite the start. God, I'm so happy I took this shit off my resume.
I was like, I'm going to do like a cool painting. I'm going to paint some flowers. And I had one to try to be like a realistic thing. I had a picture on my phone. And then I quickly realized that I'm not a good painter. And I got mad. And I had spent a lot of time doing like a neat background with the colors you see. And so there was some drinking and then some trial and error. And then eventually I kind of just restarted. And there is other people here who will be upset if I'm just like, fuck this and throw it away. So I took the painting outside and I put it in the grass and I grabbed kind of diluted colors I liked and just flicked it on. Like a modern arts, and then it turned into that, and I was like, hey, this works. And then I took some paper towel to like soak up the water because it was really wet, but then that left like paper towel texture on it, and I was like, fuck. So I had to do it a second time and not use paper towel and just let it dry, and it gave it a very strange washed out kind of look, and that's what you see there. This whole thing took a couple hours, but there's a lot of layers underneath that were like, I don't have Photoshop in real life. I can't control Z. So you gotta just do it over. And that's the spirit of Crown Royal and painting.
Yay. That reminds me when I was painting miniatures and then I didn't like how it looked. So then I painted them like over again white. And then I just kept, then I stripped the paint. But I like spent like 4 hours on one piece. And then I was like, nah, it's okay. I'm just gonna make them all look bad.
Yes.
And they did.
Exactly.
Yay.
I learned a valuable lesson, and it's that I suck at painting and should probably not do it.
Yeah, yay. Chad, you know how you get better at painting?
By coming on the canvas?
Yay.
Yeah, you did it! Yay! It's by painting, is you get better at it if you do it more. Sucking at something is the first step to being great at it.
My problem is I watch people on YouTube who are way better than me, like, oh, he makes that look easy, I can do that, and then I can't.
Oh.
I actually can relate to this because I do sometimes like watch videos of people drawing on YouTube and I'm like, oh man, yeah. And then like I started to try and do it, and it's like, oh, why does my hand not work right?
Yeah. Anyways.
Anyway, we've got some comics to talk about, but we'll get to those in all in good time. In the meantime, Emily has bullied Chad into watching yet another anime.
We have to hear about it. Hold on, I would like to say this took very little bullying.
Admittedly, you have a good track record now.
This took a suggestion and the recommendation of both myself and my friend Alice, and that was all it took. I did not have to strong arm Chad. But admittedly, this one's only like 12 episodes, so like it's not as much of a time sink as other things I've tried to get Chad to watch.
Yeah, I've been watching Yurikuma Arashi, I believe is the full title.
The full title is Yurikuma Arashi Love Bullet, but we could just go with Yurikuma.
I thought Love Bullet was the name of a random episode.
No, that's like the subtitle of the show.
I like how the one main character's got a gun in her locker, and I'm like, that's Japan. This is the United States. That's, you know, like it doesn't work.
Do you know that Utena almost was with guns instead of swords, but there was like a big shooting that happened like right when they started work on Utena, so they were like, oh, we don't want to make people think about that, so they switched to swords. Which is, I guess, why there's... That's probably why there are guns in this, is because he wanted to reuse that idea.
I think I would have finished Utena if it had guns.
I feel like Utena would have finished a lot sooner if someone had a gun.
Yeah. Probably. I mean, there'd be none of this, like, pussy shit of just, like, cutting people's lapels off.
Pussy shit!
Would have turned around and fucking clapped those kids with a gun.
It's symbolic.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, Jean-Luc.
Anyway, so Chad, what do you think about Yurikuma? I know that Jean-Luc does not want to talk about anime for any longer than we have to.
Yurikuma is like borderline incoherent nonsense, but when I found out the bears equal lesbianism, things started making way more sense.
Bears equal a lot of things, but they do most importantly equal lesbianism. The whole series is a commentary about the way that society sexualizes queer women.
And bears.
And bears.
Also, as someone who knows a guy that does bear hunting, the idea of the bears trying to take over is kind of laughable because you could just give them donuts and shoot them. It's honestly, apparently not that hard.
Huh.
Well, like,
if someone gave me a donut and then shot me because I was eating the donut and not paying attention, like, that would work, right? Same with bears.
Yeah. They could just set up a stall and I'd be like, oh, you want a free donut? And I'd be like, oh, shit, yeah, thank you. And then, bam. I'd be like, oh.
Form a line. Well, yeah, it's entertaining, it's interesting, it's really weird, it's kind of stupid. I'm definitely going to finish it. I'm curious where it's going to go. I'm like 4 episodes in now. The first 3 have so much fan service to the point where, like, I don't want anybody to walk in when I'm watching this because I don't have to explain it.
Yeah, you've made it past you've made it past, like, the first, barrier of entry is the first 3 episodes, because they really lean heavy into the fan service, but like it has a purpose, dang it. We're talking about sexualization.
Kill la Kill did too, and I still don't like,
well, this is better than Kill la Kill, in my opinion.
Well, I haven't finished Kill la Kill. I watched one episode of Kill la Kill and dipped the fuck out.
Okay, well,
this
I've watched
going.
All of it, and I can tell you that the plot of this is, I think, more thematically sound and less actually exploitative than Kill la Kill ends up being.
The only reason I trust
Kill la Kill thinks it's smarter than it is,
is because I've seen Utena, and Utena goes somewhere and has very deliberate reasons for the dumb stuff it does.
Mm-hmm.
Everything pays off in that anime, so I'm assuming everything's going to pay off in this one.
And for the most part, yeah.
You know, you watch 2 episodes of this and you're like, I don't know if I want to watch the rest of this. This is kind of weird. Like, I understand that because I thought that and then I kept going.
A lot of people hopped off when it started airing, and it actually sort of soured the director's reputation amongst anime fans for a few years. Because, it, like, this in combination with, like, a lot of other things just sort of... gave people this idea that he's this, like, creepy man, sexualizing lesbians, and you know, maybe there's some truth to that. We don't know. We also don't know.
He also hates stairs.
He does hate stairs. That's true. And having gone to Japan, everything is stairs. There's stairs everywhere. So I feel like that's just true to life. But yeah, I'm glad you're.
I'm not sure I recommend it yet.
I'm sure that you're. I'm glad that you're at least like kind of enjoying? Question mark.
I'm really curious where it's gonna go because I have no idea.
You're not hating it, and I feel like that's a plus.
Yeah. Well, like if a show is gonna keep me like totally confused for 4 episodes straight, like that's kind of neat, right? Like most things can't do that.
Yeah.
Usually, you have like a pretty good trajectory of where it's gonna go, and you can start guessing where plots gonna happen, mm-hmm. what characters are gonna be around. And at this, I'm just like, I don't fucking know. Like, mm-hmm. not a lot's happened.
Yeah.
But also a couple people have died. And I like how the bears are like, the nameless characters don't taste as good as they're eating a character. And then they're like, we regret another person has died. And they don't even say the name. They just move on because it's a nameless character. And it's like, ah, it's funny.
Yeah. I'm interested to hear your thoughts. And I will definitely talk about it with you on my own podcast.
Yeah.
But speaking of anime, you know, John, you don't normally like anime, but this week we had some Star Wars anime.
Yeah, we did. Star Wars Visions, which, you know, I'm kind of like a Volcel when it comes to anime. I just choose not to participate. But I'm kind of like whatever the... I'm a total fucking slut when it comes to Star Wars.
I know.
Much to my...
Yeah, we know.
Unfortunately. And so I watched all of Star Wars Visions. Have you guys, out of curiosity, has anybody else watched any of it? I know there's some interest, but I'm not sure if anyone...
I watched the first 4 episodes today, with the intention of watching the rest of them. I just, did not get around to the rest of them today.
That's fair.
I saw the first 3.
Okay. Okay, interesting. Okay, so I guess I'm the only one who's seen them all, so... I'll try to, if I do spoilers, I'll try to keep it only to the first 3.
Yes. I'm not that worried about it.
There's not that much to spoil. All of them, yeah. The good guys win in the end. It's...
Yeah, I mean, they're all, like, shorts, so there's not really that much to spoil.
Yeah. I thought it was a really good collection overall. There's only 2 that stick out as being particularly weak. And the rest all have merit, at the very least. The 2 that I didn't really care for were Twins, which is episode 3, which is just so fucking boring, dude. And has some of the worst writing I've ever seen in anything in my life.
I knew.
Did you like it?
There's no way, right? That's a complicated question.
Okay.
I mean, I didn't dislike, I enjoyed watching it. I think... I agree with you, the writing fucking sucks. Like, the writing is very bad, and especially, like, I watched the English dub, and just the writing coming out of these characters' mouths was, like, constantly very cringy, and none of it sounded natural at all. But, like... It was just, it's kind of what I expect from Studio Trigger at this point. It was extremely Studio Trigger doing a Star Wars. I love all of the aqua blue rim lighting and the reused character designs from their other properties, but made into Star Wars characters now. Yeah. I mean,
well,
I
hope they keep their shitty little hands off of Star Wars.
I thought that the fight scenes were fun, and, like, I thought that some of the animation was fun. But, like, yeah, it's just, it was not very well written at all, and all of the dialogue was awful and very silly. And Neil Patrick Harris voices the male lead.
Yeah, it's terrible.
And it's awful.
The whole thing is irredeemable. The other one that I didn't like was Toby, which is episode 6, I believe, but I won't get into that one too much. But the rest I thought were varying degrees of good to excellent. The episodes 4 and 5, The Village Bride and The Ninth Jedi, are particular standouts. I think the ninth Jedi is frustrating in a way because it feels like it should be a pilot to an ongoing show that I would love to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But it is an excellent little short. And I should say, I think that, like, all the shorts, that all of them Even the ones I don't like do a really good job of telling a really like self-contained story in the Star Wars universe. And they all sort of revolve around this like same like sort of theme of like, you know, Jedi hiding from, you know, the Empire, the First Order, or some like analog for the Empire. And I think that that gives them a lot of really cool, that's an interesting space to play in. And I think that most of them do some really interesting stuff with it. I think like the Elder and Lobin Ocho in particular, I think actually have some interesting ideas about Jedi and the role of Jedi. And I would like to see those fleshed out a little bit more. The Elder also has David Harbour giving an excellent voice performance. I've never heard him do voice work before, but he's really good.
I enjoyed David Harbour in Netflix's Q-Force, so I'm already a little familiar with him as a voice actor.
Interesting. I didn't realize he had done voice work before, but that's cool.
That's the only one that I know of.
Fair. But yeah, it's a really cool collection of stuff. It's really fun that like George Lucas obviously was heavily inspired by a lot of Japanese cinema. So it's cool to see his ideas get sort of refracted back through that same like cultural lens. I like that a lot because like the Jedi are you know, they are akin to samurai in a lot of ways. So they're supposed to be read that way. And so seeing that sort of literalized is really cool. I thought, by and large, I saw like the twins. I know people like the animation. I thought it looked like dog shit.
It's just a specific style, and I think it's fine if you're not into it, but a lot of people are, and I count myself among them.
Okay, that's fair. I thought the rest were like looked really cool, like really stylized in a way that I did not think we were going to get from Star Wars.
I love all the different styles. I just think that, like, I mean, I know I only watched like less than half of it, but I think that there's been such like creativity in
absolutely
all of these shorts, at least the ones that I've seen, and I'm excited to watch the ones that I haven't, because I liked all the ones that I watched before. I wasn't super hot on the the second
Tatooine
one
Rhapsody
with the band. I was kind of lukewarm on that one until at the very end when they asked Jabba to like sponsor them, and I thought that was so fucking funny that it like totally I totally flipped and I was a fan again.
It feels like something that like is so far outside of Star Wars canon. But the idea of like a Jedi who survived Order 66 becoming the front man of a pop punk band was just too good of an idea.
I became a little more enamored as it went on, but at first I was kind of like, I don't know how I feel about all this.
Yeah, that's fair. But yeah, I think a big part of them is just the how stylized a lot of the episodes are. They're just like consistently really gorgeous to look at.
It feels like the animation companies that worked on it got to have a lot of creative freedom with the way they portrayed the world. And that's not something, unfortunately, that I feel like we always get out of Star Wars now, because like Disney has such an iron grip on everything being like 100% canon compliant. I enjoyed that it seemed like I said earlier, like there was a lot of creativity that went into these projects.
Yeah, so much of this not only does it look really good, but also like it doesn't necessarily exist within the current canon, which I think is cool.
And I think that's fine.
Oh, absolutely. Like
I think it's great to go outside of like what has to exist within the actual Star Wars universe.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of what I loved about the old EU, was that it was this weird patchwork. Like, and some of it sucked, obviously, but it was this weird patchwork of all kinds of different stories, and not all of them were about some fucking loser Skywalker.
Yes.
So, you know, and I would love to see them get back to that, and I hope that, you know, the EU is allowed to do that way. But this was really cool. I'd love to see some of these studios get another stab at it. But I this seems like a one-off. I don't need that, but I think it'd be cool to see more. From Sis. But Alex, what do you think of the ones you've seen?
I liked it. I think the duel is a strong start. Yes. Not in terms of actual like there's not much to it in terms of like, hey, like ideas or stuff, but it's just like so stylistically cool and sets the tone really well for what the collection is. I mean, I've only seen three episodes, but just the way they use colors and they kind of have a reverse General Grievous character, which is really cool, and some great action going on. So I thought that was a really strong start. And I like Tatooine Rhapsody. Didn't love the twins also, but I'm very excited to keep going in this collection. This is one of the, I don't remember the last time I enjoyed a Star Wars thing. No, it was Bad Batch. There we go. I like Star Wars.
Yeah.
Phew, solved it. But it's nice to do this. And I hope it's something where we get a second volume or maybe some of these are turned into TV shows like that would be cool. Or like,
I would love to see like a Star Wars, like anime, like just maybe like a one season, like show or something, I think would be really fun.
Yeah. Cause as much as I do enjoy the Bad Batch and Clone Wars, I would like something that's like not that animation style, you know, as like an ongoing series. And I mean, Rebels obviously was that. I just didn't really. No, not Rebels. Rebels 2, but what's the new one? Resistance. Bounced off.
Yeah, but Resistance was also just midden.
Yeah, yeah.
It looks gorgeous. Like, a lot of the animation is really beautiful.
Yeah.
But it's very much like if you think Rebels is for kids, like, Resistance is for literal.
Oh, babies. Yeah, for sure. I watched like the first 5 episodes and it was like, okay, cool, cool. But yeah,
Rebels
is
really good, but it is still like, it is a Clone Wars sequel.
Yeah. And I hope I just hope it does well. And I know it's kind of weird to be like, I hope that Disney does fantastic everything. But I hope this is well received, because I'd love to see more of this. And I still have more episodes to see, so it's exciting.
Yeah. Cool.
Well, Chad, are you planning on seeing this? Because they're short.
Cameron brought it up as something to watch for that show.
Oh, nice.
I'm interested in the episode Trigger Animated, because I really like
that's the one animation. That we're talking about that both John and Alex didn't like. Twins.
And that doesn't surprise me.
I did not expect John Liu to like it at all. Especially after
I don't know anything about it other than the animation studio, but I'm like, well, they typically get a pretty big thumbs up for me when I watch their stuff, so
I will say
I would like to see what they do with Star Wars.
It's the worst written things in Studio Trigger that I have seen, but like the animation is fun, in my opinion, so.
It can't be the worst written Star Wars thing, because like the bar for that is pretty
fucking low. I don't think it's
the
worst written Star Wars thing I've ever seen.
Oh,
but
even I don't think it's the worst written Star Wars thing I've ever seen.
I didn't say you did, but I'm just saying, the way I judge this and the way you judge this are probably going to be a little different.
Sure. And it's cool that, like, just how bite-sized and short these are. Like, somewhere like, it's like 12 to 15 minutes, I think, overall. I don't think anyone's over 20 minutes long.
No.
The Ninth Jedi is, but yeah.
Okay.
Ooh, the best one, according to Jean-Luc.
Mm-hmm. Alex, did you watch any more Why the Last Man?
No, I,
okay.
I couldn't bring myself to care about it, but how was it?
I watched the new episode. I liked it. I thought it was fine. We get to see a little more of like what Hero is up to, and there were some scenes with Yorick and 355, which Yorick continues to be he's the last man, and he's also the dumbest man. Nice. And he continues to be dumb and be like, "Wah, I want to see my girlfriend, even though she's not your girlfriend. You guys broke up. Yorick, stop telling people she's your girlfriend."
Yeah, but, so like in the comic, it's like there is no breakup. So like him sort of pining for her makes sense. Here it's just kind of like really sad and like kind of creepy.
It's like he just thinks that because everything went to shit, like she's going to be like, "Oh, I didn't want to break up with you, Yorick, since the world has ended."
Yeah.
But, you know, it continues to be, like, about the same level as the rest of the show.
Nice.
So,
yeah.
I think it's fine.
Was Hero a nurse? Or, sorry, a
she's an EMT.
Driver in the comic?
I don't remember. I don't think that. So.
She was an EMT in the comic.
She was.
Okay. I didn't remember. Okay. But, yeah. She actually, like, there's a moment where she has to, like, put her EMT skills just trying to save someone who had, like, a gunshot wound, but it ends up being, like, beyond her skills. Like, the person needed a trauma surgeon, not an EMT. Also, we complained about why doesn't Yorick just pretend to, like, be a trans man or something.
Yeah.
That kind of comes up, like, where he he and 355 are at a like market or something, and he's wearing his mask and he thinks he sees Beth, so he goes and runs off like a fucking idiot, and he gets caught, and like the people, like the women working, like take it, like rip his mask off, and then after like a second he's like, I'm looking for testosterone, but like they still try to like apprehend him, and then like 355 mm-hmm. has to come save him because he's the dumbest man alive.
Yay.
So yeah,
nice.
Yeah, episode's fine. It continues to be an interpretation of why the last man. I'm really reserving opinions until I see how things kind of progress, because we're really just sort of getting things going in these first few episodes.
Yay.
Yeah.
Cool. Did you guys read that U52 article that I shared earlier this week?
No, I
didn't.
I bookmarked it, but I have not gotten around to it. But I want to get around to
it. Did you read it? Do you have thoughts?
I did. It was mostly Dan DiDio, Scott Snyder, Christy Marks, Judd Winnick, who did the infamous "the costumes stay on when Batman and Catwoman have sex" scene, and a couple other people just kind of talking about the U52, but. There's a quote by Scott Snyder, and it says, I remember standing in Target, pushing a cart of paper towels, screaming into the phone, you go down the hallway and you tear up my contract. And it was...
I'm sorry. Read. I've just been emotionally recovering from the fact I didn't know that Christy Marks was involved with the New 52.
She was like later on. She was brought on to do a launch of, I think it was Amethyst, Princess of Gemworld.
Yeah, she wrote Amethyst.
Well, she was the creator of one of my favorite cartoons from the 1980s, Gem and the Holograms.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which is, I guess, one of the reasons that she probably got hired onto that project.
Yeah. And it was just
interesting,
like,
that they only talked to none of the people who got fired.
They like, reached out to Gail Simone. In this article, like, it says who they reached out to, and Gail said no, and someone else said no, someone else who got fired.
Yeah,
or like,
of
course. You know, thing. But yeah, just reading it, it's clear like they didn't have a plan for the U52, and it's just like all of them talking about it. And then there's one more quote by Daniel Wilson, who is like a writer for Earth 2, and he says, I had a lot of characters to deal with, so I put together a big spreadsheet. I had basically the whole thing planned out, the major beats of what I wanted to do, and how I wanted to separate everything. So I went to New York City, I met former DC publisher Paul Levitz, and I sort of just had this immediate reality check where Paul was like, no, that's not how you do comics, man. Like, you don't plan it out.
Yeah,
just,
dude, Paul Levitz
just do it.
Just the king of writing comics, man. Definitely someone I would ask for advice, dude.
So Daniel totally. Wilson asks, no, like, that's totally. So like, how are we going to do it? And Paul Levitz says, no, we'll just figure it out issue to issue. And it's like, that explains a lot, that the publisher of DC Comics at the time was just like, yeah, you know what? Issue to issue. That's just how comics work. Yeah, this read is fascinating. Like, there's no like big, like, oh my God, it turns out that like, there's no like huge like bombshell that's dropped, but it's just sort of this, you know, 2000 word thing about how the New 52 wasn't really planned out. And Dan DiDio's like, yeah, it was a success, though. We did it. So it was a really interesting read.
You know what? It was a success.
Read through it.
It was a success.
Yeah.
Jeff Lemire got to do a great run on Animal Man.
And Grant Morrison got his Action Comics.
Backs.
And other good stuff, but yeah.
All right, well, that's cool. I will check that out sometime this week. I'm significantly less excited to read it knowing who they actually interviewed. I'm sure it's like, you know, they probably tried to get it. I would have loved to hear.
Yeah, there were like no women in the first half of it, and then they do a thing where they bring in Christy Marks, and then they were like, we asked Gail Simone, but she was like, no.
Yeah. Well, Gail Simone has talked about the New 52 a lot publicly. I don't blame her for not wanting to. That seems like it was probably a pretty rough time for her, just because of how everything went. But anyway. We should talk about some of this week's comics and not comics from a 2011 reboot. As much as Alex and I may like those comics. All right. Well, where should we begin?
Eat the Rich. Got a bit more fucked up.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I know Chad didn't like the first issue of this, but I actually like. I'm kind of vibing with this.
I don't think the writing's very good.
And it's, sure.
Like, and the way they deliver it's very heavy-handed. But the whole twist where it's, or, you know, quote-unquote twist, where they're like, yeah, everyone who works here, like, is doing it because the healthcare system sucks, and they have, like, you know, things they need to do or things they got to pay for. And so what if they eventually get eaten, their family's taken care of, and it's like, oh, that's like, that's wonderful. Yay.
Yeah. I don't think I was on the show in the for now, but I thought the first issue was fine. And I thought this issue was like pretty good. I actually think that it has like a pretty good angle on the whole thing. In terms of like, you know, the first issue obviously ends on the huge cliffhanger of like the girlfriend seeing them eat the caretaker or whatever. I don't remember exactly what his, but it, and then like Alex said, it's revealed in this issue that a bunch of the workers actually sign contracts where at the end of them, they get to be, they're killed and eaten. But in the meantime, they basically are like fully taken care of by these like, rich people. Dins.
Mm-hmm.
It's not actually the Hamptons, but it's, you know, it's like some kind of like fictionalized version of Martha's Vineyard, yeah. That kind of, which I actually think is like, I actually think that this issue does a really good job of like presenting that from this outsider's POV of like, she thinks it's something horrible. Something horrible is going on. It's just that the something horrible is capitalism and
it sure is.
The way that, but this is like this is really like kind of getting at the end game and also like a reality that we're coming closer and closer to living in which, you know, your employer has complete power over, like, and like just utter power, utter total dominance over you as a work. And it's a heavy-handed metaphor for sure. But I think that a lot of the conversations in this issue are pretty good and pretty real, right? Like the lengths people are willing to go to get healthcare and to be taken care of because there's, you know, functionally no other options. My concern is that I don't have a great grasp on what this book, like what the book is actually trying to say.
They're gonna eat the rich.
Well, I mean, I can tell, I can sort of grasp from the title that, and the way that it's presenting them that, like, you know, the author is not a fan of the rich, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I can get that. I'm just, where I'm a little bit lost is in what the actual critique here is. And if there even is one, because, it's couched in a way that, like, oh, you know, these people are agreeing to something horrible. In exchange for, you know, basic human decency. But I'm still waiting for the comic to make that connection in the text, if that makes sense. Because yeah. It feels like the text hasn't actually drawn that line.
Mm-hmm.
That like that what we're like we as the readers I think are interpreting it that way. But the comic isn't that's not textual. So I'm curious.
It's only been two issues, though.
I know, and I'm not saying like, you know, I'm not trying to like shit on the comic or anything because I think that so far it's been totally fine. I just need that extra layer before I'm fully on board.
Fair enough.
And I feel like that's the kind of thing that obviously, like, I think this is a six issue mini, or maybe it's ongoing, but I feel like I read that this is a six issue mini. But definitely feels like something that, you know, they still have time to establish, but not. You know, it's the kind of thing that I feel like in a book like this, you would want to establish relatively early on. But maybe that's me. I'm not sure. Chad, did you stick around for issue two here?
No, I thought issue one was bad. And I was like, cool, I'm on to read issue two.
That's fair. There were a lot of comics this week, and most of them I was not very excited to read.
Oh, man. Since you guys talked about one, I'm going to talk about one you didn't read. And that's Vinyl Number 4.
I read Vinyl Number 4.
Wasn't very good, was it?
No, it was
not.
What
the fuck is going on with this book?
I continue to not understand this book at all.
Why does this want me to feel bad that the serial killers that are annoying are dead?
I don't understand this book.
I don't understand what this wants me to do with any of the information in this text, other than, like, it's stupid. And it's trying to attempt pathos, and it's not working.
Oh, not really. It's just,
I hope this is a five-issue mini. I don't want to read six. And then the main character at the end who got kidnapped, he's like, I still don't like you after they save him. And it's like, fuck off, dude.
Yeah.
Everything else about this is dumb. You don't have to be dumb, too.
You know, I want to say it's a surprise that this book just went off the deep end, but yeah.
I had high hopes for this. Like, Plastic was almost good. There was great things about that one.
The art in this book is really good. Like, I consistently think that the art is very strong in this book.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I like that. It's good cartooning. I think it knows what it wants to do. Mm. The writing, it's just a little too stupid and then incoherent. Mm. And I could forgive maybe one of the things, but not both.
Fair.
That's fair. I feel like we're starting off on maybe kind of a downer, but there were some books that I feel like I liked without caveats this week.
Yeah.
One of which was Frontiersman number.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Did you not?
Fuck no, I didn't get through that.
I was kind Wait, of just really? Like I was ki- I was just kind of medium on it.
Huh.
Like, I didn't dislike it. I just, like, I guess it also probably didn't help that, like, it was one of the last books that I read, so I had been reading a lot that day, and I was a little bit like, I have to finish all these comics, because I don't budget my time well. So, that probably didn't help.
Probably not.
But tell me how you felt about this book.
So, I thought that this was an interesting riff on, like, the Watchmen idea of, you know, it's an alternate, you know, timeline where a lot of things are recognizable. I mean, this book references Obama and Trump both by name. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's very clearly taking place, like, in a version of our world, but where at one point in the past there were superheroes who were active and now are no longer active. And most of the book is this young activist going out to the Frontiersman, who's a former superhero who now has gone, like, full and prim mode and just lives out in the woods by himself. And he goes out there and asks him to sort of become like a spokesperson, not necessarily a spokesperson, but, you know, a representative of the environmentalist movement, which, you know, the whole book is largely structured as a dialogue around getting the Frontiersman to come out of retirement. And I think that is a really, like, I think that what's on the pages here is actually a compelling dialogue about this character who feels like his time has passed, and his conversations with people, like, both, like, the activist who's come to seek him out and other people in his life about what his next steps should be, and, you know, if he should, you know, go back out into the world, if he can make a difference, or if, you know, the opposing forces are just too strong, if he should just, you know, give it up and let a younger generation take over. And I think that the whole that one dialogue is largely what happens through the entire issue. There's like there's points where it's happening in subtext where he's doing other things, but those other things are subtext for, you know, how he's feeling about the possibility of coming back out into the wick eye. And I thought that was just, I found that to be really compelling. I really liked the art. I thought that it's got some, like, really heavy line work that I think gives a lot of the like, locales and environments a lot of character. They just look very well fleshed out, and, like, you just get a lot out of them about, like, the characters who inhabit those places, like, just seeing the shed out in the back and the way that his little hut is set up. And then there's a scene where he, you know, goes to the like, organic co-op where his daughter works, and similar, you get a similar, you know, kind of vibes about, like, that place and who she is from all of that. And I think that's just, like, a really well-constructed debut issue, even if it's, you know, maybe a little bit heavy-handed in terms of its politics, which, you know, this book is very clearly coming from some kind of, like, socialist perspective. It basically says so.
Like, yeah, like, not even the characters says not it. Even it's subtly.
Yeah, it's not really trying to hide it, and in doing that, it has, like, some critiques of contemporary political movements, which I thought were, you know, kind of salient. But mostly, I just really liked this character's internal conflict in this issue. And who knows, because at the end of the issue, he makes a choice, and we'll see if what comes next is as interesting to me. But I felt like this internal struggle was an interesting one, and one that I'm really glad that I read.
Well, definitely. I'll stick around for issue two.
Yeah. I dug it. Alex, did you read this? What'd you think?
Yeah, I read it. I thought it was okay. Just kind of...
Okay. I'm a little bit surprised that I'm the only one who came away from this feeling super high on it.
But... I mean, like, you talking about it makes me, like, should I go back and reread this book? Like, did I
was also thinking that.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you just thought it was okay, you just thought it was okay. But just like,
yeah, I'm back for issue two, but
I don't know, the ways they talked about like him coming out of retirement in relation to political movements and how, like, you know, really all that the activists want from him is branding and marketing. I don't know. I just thought that like a lot of that was really clever, and the way that the decision weighs on him. You know, I just really dug this. I'm excited for the next issue.
Nice.
So there's also a good essay at the end about the state of contemporary superhero comics. That's, you know, I thought was compelling. I would like to see it be fleshed out a little bit more, but I thought it made a good argument. Was there any highlights this week for the rest of y'all?
I come to you with my deepest regrets that I have to admit that you guys are right and Killer Queens is not good.
Oh.
Look, I knew that it wasn't great to start with, but issue two was just not even as interesting as issue one, and it was the first comic I read, so it doesn't even have the I'm tired excuse. Like, I read it early on just because I, like, was ticking things off of my list, and, issue two was just not great, so I'm probably, I will probably not stick around.
That's fair. I think I was also out for issue one, and I didn't.
Like, I thought issue one was fine. I didn't think it was good, but I was like, all right, I'll check out issue two. And then issue two did not really get much better, so.
That's unfortunate.
That's all I really have to say about it.
That's fair. I sort of thought we were going to be wheeling out the Sweet Paprika defense, but.
No, I am still reading Sweet Paprika because I guess I hate myself, but it was actually not even. The problem with, like, Killer Queens is that I thought issue two was just kind of boring, and Sweet Paprika continues to kind of just be a little bad, but I don't know. It makes no sense, compels me, though. And so I've kept reading, and the one funny thing that I liked about this issue is you find out at the end, she's been having this whole, like, one of her, like, sexual dysfunction issues is that she, like, keeps imagining, like, the specter of her dad, like, yelling at her for being, like, an awful slut or whatever, and when she's just, like, thinking about having sex, and then, and it's because, like, he was a dick when she was growing up, and he recently had a heart attack, so he's been in the hospital, but, she finds out at the end of this issue that the reason he had a heart attack is because he was at, like, a, like, cocaine-fueled sex orgy. And so she's having to, like, confront the fact that her dad, who was always really hard on her about being, like, a respectable, like, young woman, is actually, like, a pervert. So that made me laugh, but other than that, Sweet Paprika continues to just be sort of weirdly kind of bad and extremely horny, and I don't know why I keep reading it, but I am, so.
I like that you're reading it, because you can tell me about it, and then I don't have to read it, so I get this, like, two-sentence summary of a dumb comic I will never want to read, but also I'm kind of interested in, because you make it, like, you make it sound like such a train wreck, it's gotta be worth it, but I know it's not.
I think if you read it in, like, trade or something, it would probably not be as bad, because you're not just reading one chunk of it, like, at a time, and I think that if anyone on this podcast was going to actually, like, just kind of think this was funny bad, it would be Chad.
I get lumped into weird things now. What happened to my brand?
No, I just think that, like, because it's, like, bad and
weird.
Because it's bad, horny, like, happened? I think that you would think it was funny.
I can see that.
I think that's reasonable.
What'd you guys think of Shazam this week? That had a third issue.
I didn't.
Yay!
That's okay. I didn't really care for it. I was a little kind of a letdown, which sucks, because I was kind of hyped on the second issue, especially all the weird DC meta bullshit it was doing.
Did
you guys like, oh, we got
the first
him.
Couple issues.
We did have you. Aww.
But and no, then wait, a new character showed up, and I didn't know who he was, and I didn't care. And
I knew who he was.
Like, half an issue's worth of stuff happened in a full issue. Like, it felt so dragged out, and there's some obligatory horse shit about fighting. Like, oh, the skeleton showed up. We got to fight skeletons for two pages.
Chad, we got you last week with the Teen Titans thing. Leave Shazam out of this.
Yeah, but Chad did like the first two issues of Shazam.
All right.
I did. Yeah. I didn't really care for this one. I thought this one was, this one was boring.
I actually kind of agree with you. There's some parts of it that I like. I mean, I still think that the dialogue, by and large, is, like, pretty solid. There's that scene where Billy and Nevermore, is that what his name is? I think that's his name. Are having the chat about, like, you know, how, you know, because they're both, you know, teens, but Billy has obviously been around the block a few times as Shazam, and how, like, he's, like, respected and looked up to by the Teen Titans, and Nevermore is having some issues with, like, you know, he's not very confident that he'll be, like, he'll, you know, garner that same level of respect. I thought that was kind of, fun.
That was fine.
The bit with Raven showing up at the end I thought was really rushed, and, like, when it got to that point where Billy's, like, actually, like, the obvious, you know, heel turn comes and then Raven shows up, I really felt like you really waited 15 pages to get to this, because it does really, I think Chad, like, really hit the nail on the head. Like, it really feels like half an issue's worth of stuff happens in, you know, 75% of an issue, and then an entire issue's worth of stuff happens in the last quarter. Which is not ideal structuring. I'll finish this mini out because it's only got a few issues left, and it could definitely, you know, turn itself around a little bit, but this was definitely a weak issue. But I am really glad that, like, a Shazam book is not just doing the obligatory, like, origin story thing, and, like, we can actually, you know, tell Billy Batson stories that aren't, you know, that are about other things, which felt like it wasn't the case for a really long time.
Yeah, and, like, we had that Shazam series that was going on last year. Normally when there's a Shazam series, it's like, okay, now we take 3 years off. So it's like, oh,
right. It's nice that there's,
cool.
Yeah. I mean, they did the movie, they're doing another movie, so.
Yeah, yeah.
That kind of makes sense. They'd want to keep him in the zeitgeist. And that first movie was, like, solid, so.
Oh, I quite liked it, yeah.
Yeah.
Same.
Did
you guys read that Batman Secret Files? By James.
I did, because, like, I like Miracle Molly.
Yeah,
Who is Miracle Molly?
Miracle Molly has shown up in the Punchline comic, I think.
Oh,
the one that is, like, at the end of, is it Joker? It's one of the other DC comics that we occasionally have read.
Yeah.
The Punchline comic Joker. At the end.
That's the Joker. It's currently the Joker backup.
Okay, yeah. So Miracle Molly has been in that, and she was sort of a villain in that. I haven't really actually, I haven't read more than a couple issues of that because I just didn't really care that much about what Punchline was up to, but I have read some of it, and I like Miracle Molly because she has my hair. She has the shave side with, like, yeah, the green hair, so I'm obviously interested. And this issue was mostly just, like, kind of her, like, backstory, like, finding out actually, like, what her deal is. And
I don't want to call it a Jokerification.
And no, it absolutely is a Jokerification, Alex.
But it's a good Jokerification of, like,
it's like a Jokerification, but it's, like, about gender roles.
Yeah, it's about gender roles, and, like, you know, yeah, no, actually, that is mostly what it is, and, like, how it's also like, hey, your job doesn't care about you; you're just a commodity kind of thing, and it's. Yeah, it
like she's got all these good ideas for her job, and all the higher ups are like, "Oh, silly woman, you need to stay in your place." And, like, I know that this all sounds, like, really tired and cringy, but, like, actually, I don't know. I thought that this comic, like,
I did not expect it to pull it off. When
I thought it kind of pulled it off
at the beginning, I was kind of checked out, and then I was like, "Oh, like it really got me back in." I quite enjoyed it.
I enjoyed the experience. I normally find stories about, like, very, very, like, trite, women trying to succeed in a workforce that undervalues them kind of, annoying. But, like, I don't know, something about this just didn't really, like, bother me as much as a lot of other stories like this tend to, so.
And, like, the montages were genuinely, like, heartbreaking. Like, she's going through her day, and it's just, like, completely, like, automated, and it's just, like, miserable.
And like her boyfriend is like, I don't understand why you're trying to do this so hard, even though it's like your dream. And like her boyfriend's parents are like, our son makes enough money that you shouldn't even have to work. Like, why are you so
spaced out all the time? He's like very surface level supportive. He's like, babe, whatever you want, but you should quit your job and give up on your
dreams. Like, he acts supportive, but he's not supportive, and that's part of it. Like, it felt like a real situation that a lot of like women in professional environments can find themselves. And
it was told in like a one-off story about this person you can read about more in Batman, so it was kind of like a weird.
And I thought I liked the art a lot. I thought that the art style was cute, or not cute, but like I thought it was like nice and interesting, and
it had like a neo glow to it for sure.
Yeah, some sort of like limited color palette type stuff going on. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
It was my favorite comic of the week, so I was surprised.
Yeah, I'm glad that someone else read it, because I definitely thought I was going to be the only one that read it.
Yay!
Well, I think we might have time to sneak one more comic in before Chad cuts us off at the hour mark.
Chad, think of that Texas Blood.
Yay.
I liked it.
This whole issue, I was really just reflecting on just how we get from the Joe Bob in that we're seeing in the flashbacks to the totally detached, lifeless character that we're introduced to in the first issue of this series, and just like how disparate those two characters are, because like in this we see him like, you know, we sort of see the start of that here, right, where it flashbacks even further to like when he's even younger.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, he's playing with kids with the neighbor's kids, and you know, they clearly have this like relationship where he's happy, and he's like, him and his wife have this relationship with her and her kids, and like he's happy and, you know, living what seems like a fulfilling life. And then, you know, it flashes forward a little bit to, you know, the case that he's working, and you can already tell that like things are going fucking downhill, and it's just sort of sad and in a way that I think is pulled off pretty well, because we know where this gets him, right? Because we saw him in the first issue, and we see him like in the diner talking to the rookie, and it's just a really tragic story when you lay it out in that way. It's another good issue though.
Yeah.
Yay. Dialogue remains really strong. I just think the conversation he's having, the way the characters emote visually and just in spoken word, like it sells it to me really well. The pacing of this comic hasn't been like lightning fast, but I kind of like just spending time with these characters because I think they're well written, and I like the mystery and the murder that's going on. Like it's engaging as a backdrop. There's just a lot that this comic is doing really fucking well.
I agree.
Absolutely. Cool. Well, we can, I think, go ahead and wrap it there. It should sneak us in, I think, just a little bit below. So that's good.
Real quick.
Did anybody read Second Chances number 2?
I read it, and I didn't like it because I also didn't like Second Chances number 1. So.
What's about that guy that like gives people second chances? Like, he committed a crime and he'll get you like a fake ID or whatever, but also like some assassin's trying to like frame him or kill him or some garbage. I don't know. It's in black and white.
I didn't like it.
It's stupid. The second issue is bad.
Yeah. We didn't like issue 1, and issue 2 was not good either, so.
Yeah.
I don't know why I read it.
I read Suicide Squad King Shark. I think this is another one of those, like,
It's a digital first.
Yeah, a digital first. So, like, several issues are already out, but I only read the first issue. I liked it. It involves King Shark having to go on a mission back to his, like, home with the sea critters. But since, like, he can't have one of the Suicide Squad, like, doohickeys put in his head to make his brain explode or whatever, they have to send this girl with him who is also in the Suicide Squad project or something that he has like grown attached to because they're in like the prison together or whatever, and the whole thing is like, I can't say that I'll blow him up, but because he has grown attached to you, I will say that I will blow you up if he doesn't come back after he finishes up his stuff in, with the fish Sharky. People. So, yeah, I mean, I thought it was cute, and I'll probably continue to read this. I like King Shark as a character, so I...
Classic Amanda Waller.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, yeah. I guess now we can actually wrap it there. And we will be back next week with, as usual, more comics, more content. In the meantime, you can find the podcast on Facebook and Twitter and all that good stuff, or at Comics Podcast and The Comics Podcast on Facebook, I believe. So you can check us out on social media. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Mountain Dew Liker, MT Dew Liker. And Chad, where can people find you?
You can find me on Amazon. If you search my name, Chad Waller, you'll get a couple books. You can buy those there. Fantasy and horror and all kinds of fun stuff, whatever you like. You can find me on Bandcamp at anonym.bandcamp.com or some garbage like that. I got music. It's not very good, so don't feel like you know you need to, but if you're bored, you can find my short stories on WordPress at anonym.wordpress.com, and you can find my video game on Steam. It's called The Land of Glass. It's also on itch.io. It was part of that big bundle last year. You probably own
racial
it already.
Equality.
Oh, I have a Steam account now. I can buy Chad's game.
Yay.
Yeah.
It'll probably go on sale pretty soon. I think those are coming up again.
Nice.
In a couple months. Alex, where can people find you?
Find me on the social media networks at Alex Hanziak, and that's pretty good. That'll do it.
All right. Emily, where can people find you?
They can find me on Twitter at impandanata. I also do the podcast Imagine Me and Utena, which is at UtenaCast on Twitter. We, last week on, Friday, the 24th, that was yesterday, as we're recording this, I did a live stream, as a charity event. We played the Revolutionary Girl Utena Sega Saturn, visual novel dating sim type game.
What?
And, we played it for about 4 hours, and we're raising money for my, Utena Cast co-host, Alice. She and her wife both lost their jobs very recently on the same day. We managed to raise over $1,000 last night, and we we're doing another stream on October 1st, which is the next Friday, and we have some items that we're raffling off. So if you're interested in Revolutionary Girl Utena, or just want to help out, that we will be streaming on Twitch, and the details for that can be found on the UtenaCast Twitter account. And that's the only thing I'm going to plug today.
Cool. Well, everyone should check that out. And you should check us out when we come back next week with another episode of the Comics Podcast. Take care and enjoy the rest of the week. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
I can't believe you guys thought that was cum. That's a 10x10 canvas.
I mean, there wasn't anything to, like, show scale there, like...
Yeah, shame on me, I guess.
No, I didn't say that I thought it was.
Jackson Pollock was misunderstood in his time, too.